Welcome back to Beyond the Show, the podcast home of all things Cannabis Conference. My name is Eric Sandy, and I'm the digital editor of the Cannabis Group at GIE Media. This is episode 50, and the first episode of season 3. That's right, we're back at it in 2023 with another season of Beyond the Show, where we tee up the in-depth industry conversations that will take place at our annual event, Cannabis Conference, held out in Las Vegas this year from August 15th to the 17th. You can go to cannabisconference.com for all the info. And of course, you can tune into Beyond the Show, where we go, as you can probably glean, beyond the trade show every Friday. We have lots of announcements that we'll be dishing out in the coming weeks and months, so stay tuned. And that said, registration is already open, and you can land the cheapest rates of the year right now through March 15th. All right, on to the episode. I couldn't be more pleased to begin Season 3 with Scott Reach, the founder and owner of the Rare Dankness brand, considered by many to be one of the original legacy brands and breeders in the U.S., and the founder and owner of House of Dankness Dispensary in Denver, Colorado. His accomplishments in the industry include hundreds of cannabis awards globally for his breeding work, and being a member of the Cannabis Cup Hall of Fame, Cultivator of the Year, Trailblazer Award, and High Times Most Influential Person in Cannabis in 2017. His dedication to the industry and cannabis span over two decades. He was the keynote speaker at Cannabis Conference 2018. That was my first year joining the team and getting out to Cannabis Conference. And he's serving as co-chair of the Cannabis Conference 2023 VIP Cultivation Roundtable, which will bring 150 growers from around the industry together on day one of the show this year to speak candidly about the most important issues facing the community. I know we're excited about the roundtable, and Scott and his fellow co-chair David Holmes of Clade 9 are even more excited. So with all that being said, please enjoy my conversation with Scott Reach. Hello, Scott, and welcome to the show this week. Very glad to have a chance to connect with you a few months out, about 6 months out, actually, from Cannabis Conference, where you will be helping to chair the Cultivation Roundtable, which we're very excited to introduce this year. Before we get into some of the roundtable stuff, I did just want to maybe back up a bit and, you know, give you a chance to, I suppose, introduce yourself to the audience and tell us a bit about what you're up to. You know, 2023 is off to an interesting start in the cannabis industry, but then again, every year is pretty interesting with its ups and downs. What are you up to lately, and how has the year been starting off for you?
It's been good. Like, I have basically taken a step back from the day-to-day operations at House of Dankness to focus more on the Rare Dankness brand and back to doing what I love, back to breeding seeds, back to growing smaller gardens, back to focusing on quality and really expanding the brand beyond just the facility that we have here in Colorado. It took a little bit of pushing to get me to step away, but you know, for the mental health of myself and my family, it was the best move that I possibly could have done. Yeah. I was working 70-hour weeks and not really seeing my kids that much. And now that I'm back to doing just the seeds and branding and all that, it's allowed me more time at home and more time to spend with family.
Well, I love hearing that. I think that's just a great universal theme. I know a lot of folks in our audience certainly are familiar with Rare Dankness and House of Dankness and you specifically. And they may also be very familiar with what you were just saying there, the long hours and the grind, so to speak, that this industry can bring about. You know, if you're willing, could you maybe elaborate a bit on this and maybe some either helpful tips or maybe some lessons that you learned in transitioning, you know, back a little bit from the day-to-day grind?
Yeah. You know, for me, it was when I started House of Dankness, Rare Dankness had already been in existence for since 2010. So about 6 years, we had already been breeding and working for other companies and helping them build genetic libraries and all that. My own personal experience in the industry goes back to, you know, 98. But for that, most of that time, it was medical market, caregiver grows, growing for fun, making seeds, just, you know, doing my thing. And then in 2016, I decided to build the House of Dangness. And it took 2 years of pretty much blood, sweat, and tears to build the 54,000 square foot facility in Colorado and put in all the automation and learn all the automation and hire a team of 54 individuals to help me operate that building. And it even caused me to move from my beautiful mountain house that was up in Estes Park that I had lived in for 13 years and move down closer to the facility so that I could be within arm's reach, like a 30-minute drive to get to work every day instead of an hour and 40 minutes. Yeah, you start looking at the amount of time and effort that you're putting into your dream, so to speak. And my dream for that facility was never for it to be a cash cow. I knew that the industry in Colorado had already kind of become flooded. And all I wanted to do was build a facility that would allow me to continue to grow, allow me to bring a higher quality product to the market, with extracts, with flowers, with the kind of the whole branding image. And over a 5-year period, I was able to do that, do it to the best of my abilities with the people that I had working with me. And at some point, the bottom really fell out of Colorado. The pound prices went from 1,100 to 1,600 to pretty much overnight, $350 to $600. And we were producing on a wholesale level at $250 a pound. And that was a hand-trimmed pound. So we were still making, you know, decent profit and all that. But all of a sudden, your margins became razor thin. And the dream of just doing my thing and having this brand and growing good weed all of a sudden became a game of margins and stress that I was not really prepared for. And my wife was working as CEO, and every night we were coming home, and instead of just enjoying each other's time, it was all spent on where do we cut corners, where do we cut back, what do we eliminate to help the margins on being more profitable. And I realized really quickly that it was affecting our relationship and affecting my relationship with my kids, because dad was at work all the time, or dad was talking about work all the time. And, you know, you have to kind of self-reflect at some point and say, you know, is the dream that I had, did I already succeed and do exactly what I wanted to do, which I had for 5 years, is that worth my family and continuing to push forward, or do I just go back to breeding seeds and working on the branding and doing the clothing and, you know, maybe start another smaller adventure and take some time to travel. And, you know, I've always loved traveling within the cannabis industry, but I've never taken time to just go out and take the family to, like this year, I'm taking them to Africa, you know? So we're going to go for an entire month, spend some time exploring the continent, and has nothing to do with cannabis, you know? So, you know, I think for a lot of people, there's a dream out there that they're chasing that is obtainable in every sense of the fashion and word, but you know, it comes with a cost, and that cost sometimes is more than what you really want to pay for it. And that's what was happening in my case. So, you know, I feel that I succeeded in everything that I had done and had set out to do. And I ultimately found a management team that was willing to come in and kind of adhere to, you know, the standards and protocols that we had kind of set in place, and allowed me to step back. And you know, I still have my 50% ownership in the House of Dankness. I still own Rare Dankness 100%, totally, whole and complete. And it's allowed me to really jump on the what has now become the legal seed market that's kind of happened in the last 6 months, with the DEA clearing the way for seeds and clones and tissue cultures. It's taken a lot of stress off of just producing seeds to sell within the United States and sell to each state that's coming online. And, you know, it's given me a new lease on life, so to speak.
Yeah, really, really do love hearing that. And it's a great sort of narrative in many ways that tracks with a lot of economic trends in America and just workplace trends in America. I think this is something that's very relatable. And, you know, on some level, out at Cannabis Conference this year, we're going to be talking about a lot of these things. Maybe not some of the individual issues that you mentioned, but certainly the razor thin margins and just the changing landscape of cannabis. So just to back up a little bit, you know, this cultivation roundtable, this is new at Cannabis Conference. We're excited to bring 150 growers and executive level cultivation folks out to Cannabis Conference to just sort of sit and talk and address some of these. I keep using the word issues because they are so broad, and they are broad issues facing the industry. You know, when we started talking as a team with Cannabis Business Times and you, as well as David Holmes, what were some of your thoughts about this idea of just getting growers in a room for a long period of time, talking about the state of the industry in many ways? I don't know if this is a common occurrence. I know we're all on the phone and on social media catching up, but this level of in-depth conversation, I guess, what intrigued you about the opportunity?
Anytime you get a chance to speak to other growers on a one-to-one basis, personal basis, about, you know, one of the major topics I think we came up with was the downturn in the industry. And the downturn meaning, you know, prices plummeting, some larger businesses going out of business or cutting back, or cutting out of states like Curaleaf just did with Colorado and California and Oregon. Mm-hmm. MedMan closing a bunch of their stores and trying to sell other stores of theirs. You know, these are big players that are having problems staying profitable. And even to a degree, a couple of them are publicly traded companies. So I think when you see as a individual owner, the big guys having the problems, I think that it plays into the psyche a little bit. Like, am I going to go through the same thing? Is this going to be an issue that I'm going to face? If they can't make it, will I be able to make it? And I don't think it's necessarily true. I think, you know, you have to just reassess your business, reassess the profitability, and understand that the margins are going to become thinner. And, you know, one of the topics that we kind of decided to end the roundtable discussions on is brand building. And, you know, what makes a brand stand out from any other brand beyond being a flashy, large corporate entity? And it's quality. Smaller producers have the ability to produce such higher quality product because, you know, they don't have the mega footprint that a lot of these guys have. And You know, I look at the weed industry a lot like the liquor industry. You know, when Prohibition ended, it was mainly large scale producers that just fulfilled the glut of consumption for consumers out there. And it took about 60 years for the micro industry of tequila and whiskey and vodka to come about and really make its mark. And I don't necessarily think it's going to be a 60-year time frame that consumers are going to allow in cannabis to pass. I think there's a growing knowledge and education happening right now with cannabis consumers where, you know, a small percentage of them already know what quality is and they know what craft weed looks like. And I think as we educate more and more people, there's just going to be more people looking for that type of product. So, you know, it's always good to be one of those first to strike while the iron's hot. But, you know, I was lucky and I had a good brand. I have a good brand. And, you know, I was able to get out there and make a footprint and show what quality, you know, really was. Even with some of the bigger guys operating around us. But, you know, having a chance to really speak grower to grower, owner to owner, it doesn't happen very often. You know, like at these cannabis conferences, usually it's a who's got the investors, where's the money, equipment manufacturer showing off their latest, you know, latest and greatest gadgets. And to have a chance to really sit and discuss today's scope of what the industry looks like and what the landscape looks like, I think it's going to be something that will be remarkable. I'm looking forward to having a chance to sit down with Dave and really, you know, talk to everyone and really have time to do a one-on-one discussion with some of these people. I think we've allotted a little time in the middle of the day where we were going to do a lunch session. And I was like, no, let's kill the lunch session and have almost a Q&A time where we can go around and people that have more in-depth questions can, you know, speak to either other people at other tables or come speak to me and Dave. And I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be something that, you know, hasn't happened yet at any of these cannabis conferences.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really, really fun and insightful. I know our team is super excited. One little idea we've tossed around and we'll see, you know, I guess if this makes the final cut, so to speak, but giving everyone a chance early in the day to share something they need, some sort of request to share, yep, something they can provide, some sort of, you know, thing that they can give. And then, the always popular chance to brag about something, you know, get a bunch of growers in the room to start bragging about their own grows. But I want to maybe hone in on that, that first part, this idea of each person coming to the table with something that they might need. I guess my question would be, you know, when you're talking with other growers in Colorado or elsewhere, what are some of the, I guess, gaps that exist right now? And this could certainly be financial, but could also be knowledge based. It could be something more tangible in the market, you know. Is there some sort of common refrain that you hear growers asking for time and time again?
Yeah, there is. You know, when the industry first started, there were two distinct type of players. There were the growers that were the underground growers that wanted to get in and get a business started. And then there were businessmen who wanted to invest and get in and, you know, again, strike while the brand was hot or the iron was hot. And I've learned, and including myself over those years, that growers aren't necessarily the best businessmen and businessmen aren't necessarily the best growers. And it takes a marriage of the two, to speak, in a certain way, for a business to be profitable and a grow to be successful. And I hear all the time growers asking me how I was able to make that, kind of make that marriage happen. And for me, my wife was a very good business person. So, you know, initially when we were smaller, she did quite a bit and we succeeded, you know, just with her leadership. When we got to House of Dankness and a couple of years running, 3 years running, we realized that to make the business more profitable as the margins started to shrink, we needed to find someone that was more adept at the business side of the knowledge. And it took a little while to find the right partner for House of Dankness. And ultimately, I was able to find a group that were beer distributors out of Alabama that wanted to get into the industry and, you know, weren't really interested in buying into the House of into the Rare Dankness brand, but they were interested in buying into the license that's here in Colorado. And I brought them in and, you know, we butted heads a little bit at certain things, you know, that were quality based things and grow operation based things. But they had the knowledge to distribute weed, find purchasers and buyers for all the wholesale product, manage the personnel a little bit better than what I was doing. I kind of found that I was falling into a role of therapist and a fatherly figure to a lot of my employees instead of just being the boss. Pamela played the boss part very well, but I would find myself in some uncomfortable conversations that really needed to be held on the therapist couch with some of my guys. And I would always give them that advice, you know, like, hey, I see a therapist a couple of times a month just to deal with what I'm dealing with running this facility. You know, it's not a bad idea to go, you know, see a doctor every once in a while. So, you know, like, you know, finding someone to make your business better is, it's a tough road to go down because you have to give up a little bit of that control. But for us, you know, for at least House of Dankness, it was the right decision to make.
For sure. I know that was a little tongue in cheek there, but it makes me wonder if, you know, cannabis industry therapist might be a new job title on the road in this country.
I definitely think that it could be one. My guy had a good saying, you know, he says, Scott, in order, when you get on an airplane and they're going through the safety briefing, they always tell you to put on your oxygen mask first before you help someone else. And that's what you really have to do in life is, you know, help yourself first, make sure that you're okay. And then you're able to reach out and help those around you. And, you know, it's a good piece of advice that I've given to quite a few people and I try to live my life by.
Yeah, that's great. Well, while we're talking here, I did want to touch on, I guess, genetics trends. And I know that one sort of constant in the background here is just this consumer drive for high THC. And to a certain point, that's just maybe the nature of these early days in legal cannabis. But on the other hand, like you mentioned earlier, consumers are becoming more educated. There's a certain connoisseur element in cannabis, especially in the U.S. here. And just in general, we're learning more about the plant. So given some of the broader economic issues facing growers and this need to maybe differentiate yourselves in the market, what are some either cannabinoid or terpene profiles that are capturing your attention or even just just genetic lineages that are capturing your attention these days that might be helpful for other growers to think about? I know this might be a little bit of a secret sauce kind of question, but in general terms, what are you interested in?
Yeah, not at all. It's not a problem. The strain consumerism or the social media driven consumerism for strains really is it's kind of a cycle. I've been growing, you know, over 25 years, and in those 25 years, I've seen certain strains come in, fade away, come back, fade away again. You know, and what's happening right now is a lot of people have latched on to this term of a exotic weed, and that's purple, high THC, high cannabinoid profile, you know, stuff that looks pretty in a bag, smells pretty in a jar, doesn't necessarily get you high for that long, but has the look and kind of sex appeal that people want with, you know, good cannabis. What I'm seeing right now, and we refer to the, everything that's really hot right now, like the wedding cake, the Kushmints, the you know, there's a lot of cakes that are out there.
Yeah.
We refer to that as purple weed. And purple weed in general has never been the long lasting high that we saw, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, that you'd smoke a joint or you'd smoke a bowl or you'd eat an edible and you would feel that for 3 to 5 hours, you know. Nowadays, it seems with a lot of the cakes, you smoke some, you're good for about an hour, and then you want to go back to it and smoke another bowl or smoke another joint. Right now, I'm seeing a resurgence of green weed, the gassy weeds, the ones that are like OG Kush and Diesels and Kims, which were immensely popular in the late 2010, early 2015, kind of, you know, 7 to 8 years ago. People are starting to look for those strains again. I know as a seed company, we're asked all the time for Diesels. We're asked all the time for OG Kushes. And, you know, for me, I never bred for the public. I always bred for my own personal taste. And, you know, a lot of what we breed is either OG Kush based hybrids or sativa based hybrids, which I also prefer. And in a commercial setting, the sativas are hard to do. Not a lot of people want to set aside a room or space to have a plant that goes 100 days. They want something that cycles through in 60 days. They can cut it down, dry it, cure it a little bit, sell it. Good sativas take minimal 84 days and maximum sometimes 116. And you're starting to see some craft growers pop up, you know, in Oregon and pop up here in Colorado and on the East Coast that are investing that time to either have an entire room devoted to sativas or have built out a section of a room that they can control the irrigation and control the light cycles for another, you know, three to four weeks. And it's all based on the consumer becoming more educated, like we were talking about, you know. You get past that bag appeal aspect of what's pretty and what just looks good as a plant or what's been hyped up on social media, Instagram or TikTok or whatever. And you start going back to, man, I really miss that flavor of lemon. I really miss that flavor of pine. I miss the, you know, the high that was not just kind of in my face and eyes, but totally encapsulated my body in a warm cocoon, or I miss that smoke that gave me energy to clean my house, you know, like a good sativa will. You know, one of my favorite stories as far as dispensary life went over the years, in the last, you know, 5 years, what's the highest THC and what is the cheapest price kind of have become the drivers on the consumers. But prior to that, like 2009, 2010, when I had Stone Mountain, I would have people come in that were looking for specific strains that help specific ailments, or would just, you know, what do I like? Because they were wanting to try whatever I liked. And I had this old lady who was in her 80s, and she was having some like really bad sciatica issues. And we had a strain called Golden Goat. And the goat was known for kind of nerve pain, but giving you a lot of energy. And I sold her some Golden Goat. And she had like a little bit of a hitch in her giddy up, a little bit of a limp as she came in the store and whatnot. And I didn't see her for 2 weeks. And when she came back in the store, it was almost like she hopped and skipped into the store happily and had a big smile on her face and was just like, that Golden Goat works so good for me. I don't have sciatica pain anymore. And I'm cleaning my house in under 3 hours. And, you know, to see people really turn their lives around with finding the right variety for them rather than, you know, I want what is hot on social media right now. It's going to come back, you know, like it's a small percentage of the market that's educated in that form or fashion. And those people are telling their friends and their family, you know, educating them on the different varieties, and sooner or later, there'll be enough people to, really support the craft industry. You know, it's coming. You know, back to the liquor, you know, liquor reference I was making, you know, for 60 years, the liquor industry just mass produced a mid-grade quality to meet the consumer demand. And for about 50 years, America imported cartel products, cartel weed, brick weed, swag, whatever you want to call it, in metric tons. I mean, we were bringing in, not me personally, but the cartel was bringing in metric tons of garbage weed to just meet the American demand. And I personally think that what 90 to 95% of what's being produced in this country domestically now is basically that. It's there to meet the consumer demand for cannabis. And about 5% of the market is the craft market that wants high-end, high-terpene, doesn't matter about the price, boutique craft-grown weed. And we have to grow that 5% to, you know, a solid 10%, you know? And it's our job as cannabis enthusiasts and ambassadors to do that, you know, to help, I think, with this roundtable, to really, you know, push the idea that, you know, you can be more than just a weed grower, that you can build a brand, produce a craft product, find your niche, beat the downturn, make it through, and yeah, and survive.
Absolutely. Well, I'll end with one question here, just, and I'm glad you brought it back to the conference. You know, we're, I guess, 6 months out here, and it's not like this conference or this roundtable is the end all be all. It's really just an opportunity for growers to get together and talk candidly. And so maybe as a way of getting folks to think about their own goals, I wanted to ask, what's maybe one goal that you're working toward that might take the better part of this year that might inspire other growers as they're thinking about their own goals this year?
Just, you know, again, reigniting my passion for this plant, after grinding super hard for 7 years with House of Dankness, and you know, being there in the bloodbath as the Colorado market, you know, fell out, and you know, making sure that my facility was able to survive, but my personal well-being was able to survive as well. And I want people to be able to walk away from the round table with a positive attitude that I can do this, that I'm going to build my brand and make it successful. And I don't want this to turn into some sort of Debbie Downer, you know, woe is me, we're all doomed, you know, type of discussion. Because I totally don't feel that way, you know?
Yeah, I think that's a really good note as well to maybe land on there. Right now, we're very caught up here at Cannabis Business Times editorially, and certainly out there in the market, very caught up in some economic issues. We're all dealing with our own, even just our household budgets outside. Yep. I mean, it's tough out there. But I think you make a good point that, you know, at the end of the day, this is an incredible plant. It's an industry that's coming to life. It's still growing. It's still so early, and there's so much fun to be had, and so much so many wonderful things to do. And I think this is going to be a lot of fun out in Vegas, just a few months away.
Yeah, looking forward to the conference. Not really looking forward to Vegas in August with the temperatures. Yeah, it's going to be a good one. I look forward to seeing everyone. You know, I love Noelle to death, and when she asked me to do this, I told her just to give me a day to like really mull it over, and I could have told her yes right then, but I, you know, I needed to confer with the wife and make sure that she wanted to go to Vegas in the middle of the summer.
No small task.
Yeah, it's not a task.
That's awesome. Well, yes, of course, Noelle's our fearless leader. I know I'll speak for her and just say she's extremely excited about this. This is our 7th annual cannabis conference. I know you've keynoted in the past. We're very excited to have you back at this one. It's obviously going to be our biggest and best yet. And in the meantime, Scott, just want to thank you for joining me in this conversation today. I really appreciate it. It was awesome.
Yeah, no worries, man. I had a good time.
And that's a wrap on another episode of Beyond the Show. Hope you enjoyed that conversation with Scott Reach. Loved getting a chance to start the season with him this year as we look to Cannabis Conference 2023. I think we're all looking forward to this roundtable that we'll be hosting on day one. You can learn more about that at cannabisconference.com and certainly in the pages of Cannabis Business Times. This is the VIP spot. If you're going to the registration page and you're trying to figure out which type of ticket you want to buy, well, if you're a grower or if you're working on the grow side of a licensed cannabis business, that VIP ticket may be the one you want to look at. That'll get you into the 150-person roundtable conversation on day one. Like I said, though, stay tuned for more information. If you have questions about the roundtable, please feel free to reach out. My email is esandy@gie.net. You can email me anytime, and we'll get you some answers about what's going on at Cannabis Conference 2023. We're about 6 months out, and we are super excited about it. So plenty more news where that came from. We're going to continue the conversations Friday mornings here on Beyond the Show with other Cannabis Conference luminaries, much like Scott Reach. But love getting a chance to kickstart Season 3 with Scott. He's been an amazing voice for the industry and an amazing partner and really friend to the magazine over a number of years. So with that being said, we'll be back next Friday with another fantastic interview, and I will see you there.